Ladies and gentlemen, step right up.
January 20th, 2017 will be remembered as the day the people became the rulers of this nation again. We assembled here today are issuing a new decree to be heard in every city, in every foreign capital, and in every hall of power. From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. We do not seek to impose our way of life on anyone, but rather to let it shine as an example. We will shine for everyone to follow. There should be no fear. We are protected, and we will always be protected. We will be protected by the great men and women of our military and law enforcement. And most importantly, we will be protected by God. We stand at the birth of a new millennium, ready to unlock the mysteries of space, to free the Earth from the miseries of disease, and to harness the energies, industries, and technologies of tomorrow. A new national pride will stir our souls, lift our sights, and heal our divisions. Your voice, your hopes, and your dreams will define our American destiny. Together, we will make America strong again. We will make America wealthy again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Let's go see the elephant! When I'm a roadrunner, a honey.
This is Christopher Hart. Welcome to the American Adversaries Second Helping Podcast, where we offer you up a sample of our American Adversaries radio show, which you can listen to live Sunday through Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on our website, AmericanAdversaries.com, and on the station's website, TheAnswerOrlando.com, and on our Rumble channel, American Adversaries. On this week's Second Helping, we go back to the prior week when on Trump and Tuesday, December the 5th, Randy Ross, Mike McBath, and I spoke with country music star Lee Greenwood about his life, his music, and his commitment to God and country.
One of the nation's great treasures, great performing artists, and great songwriter, and great representative of that which makes America great. Of course, I'm talking about Lee Greenwood. Lee, thanks for being on the American Adversaries with us tonight.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you at Drive Time and to talk to your audience.
Well, we appreciate it. And by the way, I presume you just heard our re-intro into the show there. That's the same re-intro with the same music that we play every night as a tribute to our country and to you. So,
well, I'm flattered.
Well,
and thank you.
You got it. So you've traveled the country. I mean, you've seen people, you've met people from all walks of American life, and I mean that literally, as you know. And from the lowest of the low to the highest of the high, did you ever think that you'd ever see a day in America where Christians and our Christian heritage would be under such attack?
It's a little puzzling, Chris. I was raised on a farm in Sacramento, California. My dad joined the Navy right after the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And so we have a military family. And I don't know how we changed. I don't know where it happened somewhere along the way where people who came from somewhere else, I believe, wanted to change our country instead of assimilate. And if you look at the days of Ellis Island, when people did come here, and sometimes they couldn't even spell their own name in English, or maybe didn't even speak English, and their names kind of got changed. They still wanted to be part of America. They wanted to be what America is and was. I think that's changing, and it bothers me a great deal because we still have men and women who sacrifice their lives for us, for our freedom and freedom of other nations, and while this is going on. And of course, I'm old enough to remember the Vietnam years as well,
yep.
and the tragedy of not adoring and honoring our military for what they do to give us the right to talk about. Is freedom still what freedom is in this country?
You know, it's sad to see. You know, reports are now that the FBI was interrogating, they call it interviewing, but interrogating a Catholic priest and churchgoers. I mean, we got to turn this around.
And I believe we will. I have two young sons. My wife and I have been married 31 years, and we have two wonderful young men. Dalton's 28. Graduated Vanderbilt with a PhD in cancer research and immunology and pathology.
Wow.
And decided to take a job in finance instead because his undergrad was biochemistry. So he's going to Chicago to live with his new wife. And our younger son, who's 25, getting his musical degree, University of Miami, a master's program in engineering and producing. They are both liberal, if I may put it that way, in thinking. But not liberal in the sense of protesting what we believe in. And that's okay, because I think as a young man, I may have been liberal as well. I was sort of a free thinker, and, you know, I have a rock and roll and no drugs. I mean, I didn't take drugs or alcohol or nothing like that. But just kind of like, well, let be what let be, instead of taking an active part in what America needs from our young people, and that is pass down patriotism. And I don't know how you feel about that, but I, you know, with our two young boys who I've raised, I took them to Disney World, you know, when they were like 5, 4, 3 years old, and got the good taste of Americana. We all have to have that, don't we?
Absolutely. You know, when I was a kid, my brother and I, whenever there was a political event going on in Central Florida, my dad took us to that. And one of my first memories is Harry Truman in a parade going down one of the main roads here, sitting in the back of a Cadillac convertible with his big old Stetson hat on. What brought you to Christ, Lee?
My wife. I was raised in the Baptist church. That's not correct. I was sent to the Baptist church. My parents were divorced because of the war. I didn't really know my father or my mother very well. My mother had to work several jobs to keep us fed. So in order to have her life move forward, she shipped me to my grandparents on a farm in Sacramento. And I loved going to church on Wednesday nights because that's when they had the music program and I could sing with the choir. My grandparents never went to church with me. Interesting that is. They realized that I really needed, however, faith. So I thank them for that. Although when they got older, I should have went back and made sure that they understood what faith meant to me, and I don't think I ever did that until they passed on. It was too late. But I for many of the years I was in Nevada working on my career all the time, just wasn't, you know, I didn't really have time for church, and I didn't have anybody around me that really enforced or reinforced the faith that I'd had early on in life. But when I met my wife Kim, I married into a very Christian family, and I loved it. I adopted them, and they adopted me. And we're regulars, of course, at Brentwood Baptist Churches, where our church is in Nashville. And then I suddenly realized that I have to pass that on. I have to let people know how I feel. So I'm very conscious about telling people I'm a conservative Christian. Maybe those two don't go together completely, but they do for me. And so when I talk about being a Christian, I talk about the faith that it gives me and the strength that it gives me, and the belief that God really is in our life and in our life every day.
So my question is going to be about President Trump. But first, I just want to remind you that in 1987, I sang your song at a Star Search audition, and that tape is somewhere, and it will be destroyed. It was horrible. I destroyed it. I didn't make it past the first round. Thank God you sang the song, and I don't. But you've obviously been around the president and probably have more communication than any of us directly. And I'd like to know if you could speak to us regarding his spirit at this point. It has to be difficult when you have so many barbs coming in your direction on a regular basis to just keep positivity going in your life and in your mind. And I'm just curious if you could speak to that point.
Actually, it's not difficult. I there are very few naysayers that come to us in my circle, or even the fans that I sing for. I believe because I've already put my foot forward as a conservative, and generally a liberal doesn't come to my audience. They're welcome, but they generally don't do that. As far as my touring with the president, I love Donald Trump. I think he's a great patriot and a great American. I'm so honest with him, and he's honest with me about our feelings about America. My visits to the White House a couple of times in the Oval Office, and he was always about faith and about prayer. So I have to give that honest testimony about our former president, and I will be with him in this next election as well.
Awesome. Lee, another thing is, my name is Mike McBath. You had come out to David Siegel's events a number of times. You were put on a concert for our veterans, which, it was a packed house. You did a great job, and everybody down there appreciated it. And that's where David put him up for a couple of days. You guys really put on a show, which was terrific.
Well, thank you. And we do that every other year. It's usually me or Gary Sinise and the Lieutenant Dan Band. By the way, Gary's a pretty good bass player and a really nice guy. And he has a foundation that takes care of veterans. And, yes, the Seagulls and Westgate Resorts, I have to give them a huge a round of applause because they gave every room of their resort to veterans for a week for free. And I'm like, sure, I'm going to come down and sing for free. and I love that, and I love them. Mark Waltrip, the COO, is a very good friend of mine and has been for many years. He wrote a song called A Hero's Walk, which was military in its about a combat soldier. And I sang that for them, by the way, the other night. My wife was with me. My whole band was down and my crew. And, of course, they had fireworks after the show. And we just had a packed lawn of people. And I imagine, as I asked him how many were military service, and I think I have 90%. That were either veterans or currently in the military. And it's just a wonderful thing for the Westgate people to do. And incidentally, I wanted to mention about fentanyl. The Seagulls lost a very attractive young girl to opioids.
Overdose.
To fentanyl poisoning. Yeah. And it's called Victoria's Voice. And if the foundation for donations to make people aware, make young people aware how dangerous fentanyl is.
Very good. Victoria's Voice. How did you write Proud to be American? Did you sit down with the intent to write it, or did it just come to you?
Because of my years in Nevada, and I used to go see Elvis perform all the time, and he had a thing called a trilogy that he closed his show with, and it was moving for me. Elvis was actually very reverent. T.G. Shepherd's a good friend of mine. He's one of the TGB guys taking care of Business Necklace that Elvis gave 5 or 6 to. And we are very close. And when I saw Elvis's show at the Hilton, which is now a Westgate, by the way, in Vegas, he always closed his show with that. And I said, if I ever get my own career, and believe me, I was a working stiff in Vegas for 20 years. I worked in the lounges. I even dealt cards in the casinos, just struggling to make sure I could ends meet. I did okay. But I said, if I ever get my own career, I'm going to close with a trilogy. And so move forward. I do get my career. I moved to Nashville, Tennessee in 1980. And I joined MCA Records with Reba McEntire, George Strait, the Oak Ridge Boys, Barbara Mandrell. And we were a working crew. Every doghouse, outhouse, and roundhouse in the world, in the United States. And then went around the world with my USO tours. And then suddenly, God Bless USA came in my life. And it was one night on my bus. I was in between shows, somewhere between Texas and Arkansas. And it just came to me to say, I think it's time that I write how I feel about my country. I wasn't trying to influence anybody. I was just trying to write how I feel. And there's a long backstory to that, and you can probably get that from Circle Television. And I told that story one time in a Gaithers event. But it came to me very easily, and I put it on a record called "You've Got a Good Love Coming," which was a 1985 release.
Wow!
And Universal is the one that made the choice to release "God Bless the USA" instead of the title song, which kind of disappointed me at the time because we had $25,000 in the video we'd filmed in the London train station, and I, okay, if you want this, I'm your guy. And then suddenly, as it became more apparent that America needed it, and And of course, as you know, it's Roller Coaster. It was only about like number 11 on the Billboard charts. And then it became a popular song for the military. And then, of course, after 9/11, I can't believe how long ago that was now.
Yeah.
It actually united the nation, and three times on different charts, which told me that the whole nation really believes in what I was spitting out, and that is, it's time to believe in America.
And the nation needs that song now more than ever.
I would ask you how you feel about Florida State not making it into the final four. But I know that since you live in Tennessee, that's probably irrelevant to you. But my
go ahead.
No, I can give you a comment. I'm happy as hell that Alabama beat Georgia, but I didn't like either one of those. But I think what's the fourth? Texas is in, right?
Yes.
Georgia, Alabama, Texas, and
Michigan.
Is it Oregon?
Michigan.
Michigan. That's it. Yep. Michigan. I don't think anybody will beat Michigan. But
no, you're
but
right.
To tell you the truth, I felt a little bad for FSU because, you know, with the quarterback going down and putting in the freshman, he did really well. Maybe there should be, just as a precedence this one year, or as an exception, not a precedent, that they have a 16 playoff and let FSU play Oregon or something, you know.
Yeah.
Because
or play Alabama for that fourth spot. They can play Alabama for that fourth spot.
Yeah. I did have a real question.
Well, real quick, you'd be happy to know that Mike's wife, diehard Volunteers fan.
Go Vols.
All right, go Vols.
You know, I grew up in Indiana, Dolly Parton playing in our house all the time. The other day she did the halftime show for the Dallas Cowboys. And there were a lot of supportive people for her being 77 years old and getting out there and doing that. And there were some that weren't. What were your thoughts about that performance? And what does that say to country music as we continue to see it? Sometimes it's very young and it's aging in some ways. What are your thoughts about that?
I thought she looked good.
Amen, brother. She may be 77, but she looked 37 on TV.
I thought she looked great.
Yeah.
In a Dallas cheerleader's outfit. That takes a lot of guts. You know, and she's proud, and we're very good friends, by the way. And I was
in
Dallas.
Yeah,
I sang the Dallas Cowboys game the week before
in
that same stadium, and that's my fifth time there at the Cowboys game. But she did a great job, I thought. And there was the reason she was walking back and forth, she was supposed to be on top of the star.
Yeah, there was
and
a malfunction or something.
The star had a problem.
Right?
Yeah, it had a technical problem, and they asked her if she would stand down in front of the star. And where she was walking were a bunch of cables, and she was trying to walk over the cables.
Yeah. Well, she's a consummate professional. I didn't notice it. If you hadn't told me, I wouldn't have known.
Lee, I was just curious.
She sang at the Vols game the week prior.
Yeah. I noticed your son went to Vanderbilt, obviously, for a number of years if he got a Ph.D. Nashville's a pretty liberal city. Did he get any aggravation being your son, who's a known conservative?
Well, not when you're talking about cancer. I mean, he was in the cancer lab where they discovered Moderna.
Right.
And there's no pushback. And you know what? I have a country career. I have 11 number one hit country hits.
Mm-hmm.
You can't ostracize me just because I'm a conservative and dismiss my country career. So having said that, no, they had nothing to, you know, against him, and they loved him there.
Lee, I've got to take a quick break. It'll be short. Can you stay with us for a few more questions?
Yes, and I'd like to tell you about my Bible that I have.
Please do. I want to hear about that as soon as we come back. Once again, we're speaking with Lee Greenwood. It is a Trumpin' Tuesday, and of course, every Trumpin' Tuesday is brought to us by Sutherland Nissan and now also Morse Code in Winter Park. We'll be right back.
AM 950 and FM 94.9, The Answer.
Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Do you suffer with low energy, difficulty sleeping, digestive issues, frequent illnesses, and more? If you answered yes to any of these questions, Heiss Health Clinic is for you. Hi, this is Renee Humphreys. At Heiss Health Clinic, we use holistic methods to balance your body so it can help heal itself. Call Heiss Health Clinic at 407-677-1660 or go online to drheiss.com so we can help you experience outrageous health.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you're like me, you're probably spending more time in your vehicles, so it's more important than ever that we can rely on them. That's why if you have a Mercedes-Benz, you need to know Jerry and Janice Shepherd, because you can rely on Jerry's MB to keep your Mercedes in tip-top shape without leaving your budget out of shape. With their state-of-the-art facilities, factory-trained techs, decades of experience, and reasonable prices, Jerry's MB is your dealership alternative. Jerry's MB is located just off Alafaya Trail, just north of UCF. Give them a call at 407-366-6499 or visit them at jerrysmb.com. Remember, they're your dealership alternative. jerrysmb.com, 407-366-6499.
Folks, do you suffer from nagging back or neck pain? Ever wake up feeling more exhausted than the night before? And what about that sleep partner who's turning your nights into a concert of snores or dealing with breathing issues, acid reflux, or sleep apnea? Here's the game changer. Discover a better night's sleep and a better day at Relax and Comfort. We're a unique mattress store. At Relax and Comfort, we're all about elevating your sleep experience, and we've got all the top brands to prove it, including Tempur-Pedic, Personal and Comfort, and Stearns and Foster. Our smart beds aren't just beds. They're your personalized sleep sanctuary with hundreds of healthy positions. They're designed to fit you perfectly. Plus, they have an amazing feature, automatic snore detection and response. No more sleepless nights because of a noisy partner. The best part, we're conveniently located at Winter Park Village, just across from Regal Cinemas. Come see us today and experience a night's sleep like never before. Relax in Comfort, where better sleep leads to better days. That's relaxandcomfort.com or visit us in person at the Winter Park Village, just across from Regal Cinemas, a family tradition since 1967.
The stars are brightly shining. It is the night of the dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world.
All right, welcome back to the show, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, that is a selection from Lee Greenwood's Christmas Selections. You need to check it out. So, Lee, tell us about your Bible.
For years, Kim and I both have a Bible on our nightstands, and we have a family Bible on the coffee table in the living room. Somebody asked me the other day, they said, what do you think about our beginning as a country and how we got started? And I said, well, this is a bunch of people that wanted to get away from persecution of being a religious person. And I thought, well, you know, the Mary of our very official documents from the form of our republic with the Bible itself might be a good idea. So we licensed a King James version of the Bible. We bound it in leather. We included the lyrics of God Bless the USA in the front. And at the back of the Bible, we included the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, and the Pledge of Allegiance.
A great idea.
It is called the God Bless the USA Bible. It can be obtained from LeeGreenwood.com or GodBlessTheUSA.com. And it's a beautiful handheld leather-bound Bible, and we actually sold out twice already, but they will be available here shortly.
Can you give the title and the locations again? LeeGreenwood.com.
Yeah, one more time. It's GodBlessTheUSABible.com, or go to my website, LeeGreenwood.com, and click on the tab for the USA Bible.
Excellent. How was it that it came to be that Donald Trump would use God Bless America, I'm sorry, God Bless the USA for his entry music on his campaign rallies?
You know, it just happened. And I talked to my wife and my management team about, do we respond in any way to the question? You know, I sang at his inauguration.
Yep.
At the Lincoln Memorial.
I was there.
And I did for 41 as well, the same exact same place. So when he used God Bless the USA, I said, well, I mean, I believe the guy's a patriot. I didn't like the other side. And I said, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. A lot of people did try to scare me off from singing at the inauguration, and I wasn't going to do that. But it just kind of made me proud. And by the way, I've sang for 10 different presidents, conservative and liberal alike. At the Reagan Library, I sang in front of Nixon, Carter, Ford, Bush, and Reagan. And
wow.
At the Texas Hurricane Relief at Texas A&M, it was Obama, Carter, Clinton, and both Bush presidents. And so So it's not like I have chosen a side and I ignore the rest. So I just try to influence the nation.
To that point, if you were asked to sing at Jimmy Carter's funeral, I take it you would?
Absolutely.
Okay. The upcoming campaign is going to be nasty. How have you managed to, Randy asked a little bit about this a while ago, how have you managed to be in politics and yet not get scarred up by it like a lot of people have been?
Well, the first thing I don't do is use my stage as a sounding board. I don't broadcast my politics on stage. I'm an entertainer. I've been an entertainer since I was 10 years old, musician, writer, and it's my art. It's what I bring to the public to make you happy. Now, if I make a poke a little fun at it in a moment, I might do that. But I think that's why people don't throw stones at me, because I'm not hostile. I don't ask for that.
What would you say about President Trump now that you've gotten to know him a lot better?
He's disarming. He's funny. and he's dynamic. I kind of like the off-the-cuff stuff that he does. It's certainly not like anybody else, and I certainly like the fact that he was disliked by the Democrats and the Republicans. I thought, you know, it's like he don't like any, and nobody likes him. You know, it's like, well, that's great, because we need somebody that's not aligned or biased. He's an American.
Mr. Greenwood, it's just us talking here. So, of all the rallies that you've been to, and you know we love Trump, and you love Trump. But if you had to pick out one of the folks that you've run into on the campaign trail, it's done a rally that you really think is part of the bright part of the future of our process in politics, who might that be?
That's interesting. I don't know how I would go about that. You know, there's a couple women who would deserve that nod. But I tend to not want to make that suggestion. I'm going to leave that alone.
All right. Well, let me ask you this. Who do you listen to when you want to listen to some music and it's not yours?
Tower of Power.
Tower of Power. Wow.
It's a rock band from Oakland. They've been together about 50, 60 years.
Yeah.
I mean, in the early days, I was influenced by many singers. Peeble Bryson, Sam Cooke, Ray Charles, Kenny Rogers. You know, before I formed my own kind of style. But when it turns to music, I'm pretty much influenced by rhythm and blues and soul.
Somebody told me that to ask you, did you really, your first gig was as a saxophonist? That was your first instrument, playing the saxophone, and you taught yourself?
Yes and no. My first instrument is actually a keyboard.
Okay.
Because of my mother's instrument. But I never played guitar or mandolin. That was my mother's instrument as well. But after playing for a few years on the piano, then I ended up playing the saxophone. As a matter of fact, in 1955, when my parents moved me to Anaheim, California, I went 1 year there. I worked in Disneyland with the Keystone Cops Quartet, and I was 5'5", and I played baritone sax. I wish there were pictures of that. I can't find them.
Wow.
But that was pretty interesting.
I bet it was.
Lee, do you have any more new songs that you're working on now, patriotic songs that take in consideration of how the world is today?
No, I don't. I write some music for other artists, but I haven't really had much time to do that. I don't know. I'm so busy now. I don't know how I can just pay attention to my career. My wife is a pageant director, and my two boys now in college, and I'm like, if I retired, I'd still be busy. I don't know what to do, but I don't write all that much anymore.
Well, if you're down to Orlando way again, we'd love to take you to a great Italian restaurant right up the street here, some great sponsors of ours. I tell you, it's been an honor and privilege to have you on the show with us, and I certainly hope you can come back again. And I'm going to get myself one of those God Bless the USA Bibles.
Terrific. And by the way, my stepfather, who stepped into my life when I was 14, was Louis Gentinoli. And he and his two brothers taught me to love Italian food, and I would gladly
jump it only.
Well, this restaurant is two brothers from Positano, Italy, and one of them started cooking on his mother's knee at the age of about three. So,
you're on, because Positano is one of our favorite cities in the world.
Oh, it's absolutely beautiful.
Yep.
Well, Lee, thanks so much for the time you've spent with us tonight. God bless you for what you have done for this country. We need these uplifting tunes so very badly.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We believe in America. Keep the faith.
Indeed we will. Indeed we will. Thank you so much. All right,
thanks,
once again,
guys.
You got it.
Thank you.
Lee Greenwood. So that's the God Bless the USA Bible.com or LeeGreenwood.com. And, you know, it's that gift-giving time of year, and I don't know of a better gift to give than a Bible. Even the people who already have them, they always welcome a new one, I guarantee you, especially when it's a special one like this.
Isn't it nice to see a guy dedicate, in essence, his profession to Christianity?
I think his entire life, it sounds
like. Yeah, I mean, this is truly an American hero.
Yeah, he's right. Yeah. He spent about 20 years dealing the tables out there in the casinos in Las Vegas.
Mike, there's still hope for you. Yeah, he can become a gambler.
I can come back.
That's
right.
Card dealer.
Well, we'll be back with more of the American Adversaries on this Trumpin' Tuesday, which is brought to us by Sutherland Nissan. They're great folks at Sutherland Nissan, and they got some great vehicles, and they'll give you a great deal. East Colonial Drive and Chickasaw Trail. Check them out, please. We'll be right back. On Monday of this week, Lori Cardoza Moore, John Barrows, Rick Brown, and I spoke with Liz Collin about her excellent documentary, The Fall of Minneapolis, which reveals the truth about George Floyd's death and the betrayal of Derek Chauvin. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we were talking on, I believe it was on a Monday, wasn't it, John? A couple of weeks ago, Lori, that I had seen our next guest on an episode with Tucker Carlson, and she was talking about her documentary, The Fall of Minneapolis, and about the George Floyd thing, which we never bought into, but so many people did. Well, lo and behold, she got hooked up with Carl Jackson and was on his podcast last Monday. I hope you caught that. That's thecarljacksonshow.com. But we got her here tonight, so we want to talk to her about her life and how she got to do this documentary, what it's meant to make The Fall of Minneapolis. Liz Collin, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you guys very, very much for having me. I don't want to start right away with a correction, but I've never been on with Tucker Carlson. But if you guys know him, if you could just make a call for me, I'd appreciate it.
There you go.
All right. Yeah. Well, he was talking about your documentary, and nonetheless, thank you for correcting me, though.
I figured I'd start off light, but no, I appreciate the time, you guys.
Okay. Well, first of all, how is it that you came to make this documentary?
Yeah, so it's been a bit of a journey for me. I was in the mainstream media for nearly 20 years before all of this. I was working in Minneapolis as a longtime anchor and reporter during May 25th, 2020, when this all unfolded. I happened to be married to a guy by the name of Bob Kroll, but he was a longtime police lieutenant in Minneapolis, and he was the president of the police union during all of this, and we'd been married for several years, but all of a sudden, anyone who had any relationship with a police officer needed to be, you know, killed or canceled. So I was demoted in the wake of all this, lost my position at the station. But I really started following the case pretty closely, not only for my personal connection to it, but as a journalist, I was so bothered how we were privy to so much information that we refused to pass on to the public, information that I think would have made a difference early on here, and I was sort of muzzled and thrown in a closet, so I couldn't really do much.
It's my understanding that you were quite popular in Minneapolis until you started delving into this, and then you became a pariah of sort. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know, I'm a Minnesota native, so grew up actually watching the station where I worked, and I was the highest-rated weekend news anchor in the Twin Cities, had been for a really long time, won a bunch of Emmy Awards, my reporting helped change laws, did all the things that I thought mattered in journalism. But I really saw, you know, the way the media was able to manipulate this message and push this very divisive narrative forward when the facts never supported really any of it, and everybody was failing to call out the people that needed to be called out, and that's supposed to be the job of journalists. So I left the mainstream media and got into independent media. I work for a place now called Alpha News, but they allowed me to put out my book, which was put out last year. It's called They're Lying, The Media, the Left, and the Death of George Floyd. But we wanted to take it a step further, do this documentary, allow people to see this for free. The truth, you know, should be free. And so that was sort of what led us to the documentary itself.
By the way, it was Jesse Waters, I believe, that I saw you on. Sorry about that.
It's that
time slot. It's always going to be Tucker Carlson
exactly.
at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, I hear you.
All right. But anyway, he does need to have you. He does need to speak with you, and I hope that he will soon. How did it play out in the newsroom? This is what's always kind of intrigued me, that the media— No, that much of what they're telling the public is either not correct at all or not the full story. So how did that play out in this case in the media, in the newsroom there? Because obviously you wanted to get to the truth, but I presume your producers and colleagues did not.
Yeah, I think I saw this sort of again and again in my last, you know, I would say I trace it back 5-6 years in mainstream, my last sort of tail end of my career in mainstream media. It wasn't so much what we were telling the public anymore, but what we were not. You know, I kind of consider it lies by omission. We were, you know, manipulating, the messaging and poisoning the public, I felt like, especially when it comes to a lot of these law enforcement stories. And this was long before I married a police officer. I just felt that the press never did a good job, and they always were, you know, demonizing, the police officers. And frankly, we're all less safe to this day because of the lies that were told, on May 25th, 2020, here in Minneapolis. So instead of the conversations being about this case, we had things changing, and this was via CBS News. You know, I was working for a CBS O&O station, owned and operated station in Minneapolis. So half of the people we interviewed after George Floyd had to be non-white or from a protected class. These are the kind of mandates we're instilling, and I'm saying, well, so we're implementing racism. This is what we're doing. I've never had to judge someone on the color of their skin before, you know, we put them on television. But this is the sort of stuff that was happening, and just a lot of different, you know, changing the language or crafting things a certain way. Reporters were allowed to use the hashtag Black Lives Matter, of course, in the wake of all of this. Wow. No mainstream media really has much to say about that movement now after, you know, again, what the evidence has shown. But just so many things that reporters were doing in the wake of all this, but really failing to get at the facts.
One of my co-hosts here, John Barrows, after we spoke on the air about this, he watched your documentary. And John, tell her your reaction, because I think it's probably typical.
Yeah, I was sitting there with my brother and sister-in-law, and we were just shocked out of our mind. It seemed that there was so much corruption from the powers that be, and just made me not want to think that I was living in a country that this is happening to. And I want to thank you for putting that out, because it was very important to me, and I'm sure it is to a lot of people.
Thank you, John. I appreciate that. And I will say, you know, it wasn't really, you know, here's the story to change your mind. We wanted to craft it in a way that, you know, really, these are the facts. You can decide whatever you want after the film. You know, it's up to you. But ask yourself, why was this kept from you? Are we okay with the media, you know, our government, our politicians, you know, pushing this all on us, withholding information from us, and then we're left to deal with the consequences, you know, three years later from all of this. I think you're absolutely right, John, too. The message about this is our so-called justice system. Are we really okay with that? And again, if it's just on thefallofminneapolis.com, available for free. It is about an hour and 45 minutes, so you have to have a little time to watch it. But I do appreciate, you know, people sharing their feedback once they see it.
It goes by fast. Because you're sitting there going, what, really? What, really? What, really? And how did you get access to all the video and the information to put it together?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing I like to make clear also. This is all public documentation. I mean, again, I've been a reporter for a long time. It's not like this is some conspiracy theory I crafted together. This is all there, even in the book, which is again called They're Lying. But I had more than 230 sources used for that book, and I worked with, on that book, Dr. J.C. Shea is his name. He's a former police officer himself who helped me put the book together, and he was the director and writer of the film. And all of our information, all of this public documentation is available for everybody. We put it on thefallofminneapolis.com. So this is the very first time in Minneapolis police history that they withhold body camera footage from the public. You know, this is an 18-minute interaction that takes place with George Floyd. The jury, in the end, is only allowed to see 90 seconds of that. But the public itself is only allowed to see that viral Facebook video. That goes on for 2.5 months before it's actually an international news agency that leaks the body camera footage, as crazy as it sounds to even say that it was leaked. But that was sort of after people had moved on and already thought what they thought 2.5 months later. So this, as I say, this information is really all out there. We have the autopsy of George Floyd, which was done within 12 hours of his death. It's, you know, the official autopsy is complete. That's withheld from the public for nearly a week as there's sort of these backdoor meetings with prosecutors. And you see for yourself how the narrative kind of changes over the course of those days and meetings. The FBI is involved in this case within just a few hours. You know, I could kind of go on and on with everything that was happening behind the scenes.
And you'll see it all in the documentary, The Fall of Minneapolis, thefallofminneapolis.com, and spread the word around. People, go ahead, John.
Yeah, you know, the as you were talking about your history or your where you've worked and what you've done earlier on the show, I was kind of wondering to myself, how long... I mean, what is it like to be in your position and seeing the things you see through being a journalist? What is your view of, like, the state of our country and the state of
the media,
our justice system? I mean, how do you keep a positive outlook after seeing and knowing all this stuff?
Yeah, John, it seems to be harder with the day, to be honest. I will say that in Minnesota, we seem to have endless material when it comes to things to write about and report about, sadly. And I also think, you know, I've seen for myself, especially the Minnesota media, but I think it's indicative of other markets as well. There seems to be this fear sort of permeated, you know, it's palpable in the air. So many people don't want to report on certain issues. And that's where... you know, we kind of thrive over where I am now at Alpha News, focusing on the things that the mainstream media avoids. And we say we're, you know, uncensored and unafraid. But I think the only way that we're able to move past this is if it is exposed and it is talked about. And, you know, that's what we aim to do. But, yeah, absolutely, you're right. I think that is difficult because if I could have had my way, I wish there was a happy ending. To this documentary, maybe the next one I do, there will be, but no, I don't want to give any spoiler alerts here, but it doesn't end on a happy note for sure.
Yeah, well, it's because it was a big lie, another big lie, and what troubles me, and from what you're saying, and I think I kind of noticed this also during the scamdemic, the COVID nonsense, is that local media ceased being local media; they became mouthpieces for the national media with a local face. Am I wrong?
Yeah, I think that, you know, especially over this, and I was in mainstream media for COVID as well, it's sort of like journalists became activists. Mm. And I've never seen on such a level, you know, kind of in both stories, that they're fine just pushing propaganda when we were privy, again, to information that deserved to be shown or to, you know, at least to push back on some of this. With COVID, for example, you know, there was so much that came out. People were calling in with tips about, you know, having reactions to the vaccine and whatnot. We would never do a story about something like that because that didn't fit the narrative. And I'd never seen that on such a scale before with some of these different things that have happened over the years. But again, just refusing to sort of properly inform the public, which is supposed to be our job.
Hey, Liz, it's Rick Brown. Hey, I spent the past couple of years asking myself why. You know, I see what's happening in the media. I see what's happening with the one-sidedness of every story that gets reported, both nationally and locally. And I keep asking why. Have you ever asked that or come to any conclusion? What is in it for these local news stations and local reporters to all be screaming liberal activists?
Yeah, an excellent question, Rick. I would just say from my experience as a reporter, you know, you always follow the money, follow the power, and then I think somewhere along the lines you find the answer to that. Mm-hmm. And you look at what big media has become. I think it's like 80% of the ad revenue that goes to, you know, these mainstream corporations comes from Big Pharma. They're big supporters of of that, obviously, and that's why I think all big stories, and you can sort of name them, have been broken by independent journalists nowadays. you know, whether it's the censorship at Twitter that was uncovered, or different things that other, you know, independent media sources have uncovered. There's so many big stories that maybe 3 or 4 years later, the mainstream media will acknowledge. But the people, you know, sort of with the drive to break it from the beginning are not attached to a lot of these big networks.
We're speaking with Liz Collin. She's now with Alpha News. They produced The Fall of Minneapolis. You can find it at thefallofminneapolis.com. Make sure everybody sees this, that you can get to have see it.
Yeah, Liz, this is Laurie. And I want to, as a filmmaker myself, produced several documentary films about Israel and anti-Semitism. You know, I commend you for taking this issue on and being courageous enough to go public with this, because I can only assume the death threats that you have encountered.
No, thank you, Laurie. I appreciate that. And thank you for your important work also. Yeah, I mean, I think that this was, you know, kind of on my heart for a long time. I'm a person of faith, and I knew God was like, all right, you're going to have to do this. I was sort of waiting, like, is anybody else going to speak up? But I was kind of in the perfect position, you know, for a reason. I really have dedicated to trying to be a truth teller my entire career, mm-hmm. And sort of had to leave that dream job or the corporate media world to be able to do this. But I will say, by far, you know, the positive feedback has outweighed any negativity. And you know, people have been critical of the film, but if they are, they just call me names. That I'm a white supremacist, or, I mean, it's nothing. Nobody has disputed the facts, and it's been nearly a month at this point. So where does that leave us exactly? You know, so I think that says a lot. Or, you know, God forbid I'm married to a police officer, so of course I have this agenda. But that was another reason I wanted to do the film too, Laurie, is giving a voice to these men and women who served the city of Minneapolis mm-hmm. for so long, because it didn't seem like the media even cared about them. They lost, you know, nearly 40% of their police force in the wake of all of this. They were basically served up to these peaceful protesters, also known as rioters,
right?
And the third precinct that was, you know, surrendered to the rioters that night, and just recounting that. And I think every officer we brought in for an interview broke down at some point during the interview. So really heartbreaking. Wow. And you really see for yourself too how this just didn't have to happen if the truth was told.
That's all you got to do is tell the truth, and everything else will work out fine. What about your husband? What happened to him?
Yeah, he luckily enough was eligible to retire
right.
after a little while, you know, and how that works with pensions and whatnot. They need to sort of get out of there, otherwise they lose money going to work. So he was able to retire during all of this, certainly not the way he wanted to leave. But, you know, you really kind of see this force you're up against. And that's why people say, you know, what do we do? And, you know, I say you can support your law enforcement no matter where you are, or get involved with groups that do that. But until voting changes, especially in Minneapolis, I don't really know how it gets better.
Well, I've got a three-pronged question, but you're a professional, so you can handle it. Are you at all in contact with Derek Chauvin? And what did you feel when you heard that he had been stabbed 22 or 23 times, and also when the Supreme Court turned down his appeal?
Yeah, just walking back. So we put the documentary out, and the film itself does raise a lot of questions about the FBI that I don't think people have really known about before. And then it's 9 days after putting the film out that he's stabbed the day after Thanksgiving. And obviously we were shocked and horrified that happened at all. Stabbed 22 times as he was making copies in the library that day. And I will say, you know, he'd been at this facility without any incident for 15 months. We had been in contact with him actually up until that Wednesday of the stabbing. He's only been able to have a couple calls with his family since, as he recovers. But then you have a former FBI informant who's responsible for all of this, who had just a few years left on his sentence, but decided to go ahead and do that. So I think there is so many questions that remain about that, and we'll continue to follow it, of course, on at Alpha News. But we have not spoken to him since the stabbing, but continue to be in touch with his family. And obviously, there's nothing else to say beyond it. It's just, you know, horrific. And also, just a few days after putting out the documentary, the U.S. Supreme Court, you're right, came back and said that they would not accept this appeal or, you know, hear the case at that level. But there are a couple more legal maneuvers here moving forward with some new evidence and such. And, you know, all hope is not lost as far as, you know, what could possibly be down the road for Derek Chauvin. For sure.
Considering the circumstances in the meantime, I don't understand why he's not in a minimum security facility rather than an FCI. Tell us a little bit about Alpha News.
Yeah, so we've been around just about 6-7 years at this point. It was primarily just a place for written content, things you wouldn't read about in the newspaper and whatnot. Certainly more focused to conservative media, but I do some podcasts for them. It's called Liz Collin Reports, a very creative title. But I bring on people, you know, you won't hear about on the nightly news and whatnot. We have a Minnesota-based focus, but I think a lot of what's happening in Minnesota, you know, does certainly travel to other parts of the country as well. So it's just alphanews.org. We are a nonprofit, and we have, you know, several hundred thousand people that are looking at our stuff every day, and just kind of an up-and-coming news group in Minnesota.
Alphanews.org. And thefallofminneapolis.com. Please go to both locations, ladies and gentlemen. Get involved and help Liz get the truth out. And if we can pull any strings, we'll get you a screening down in Mar-a-Lago, too. I don't know. That was, we'll work on that one.
Hey, thanks, guys. That'd be great.
Well, listen, I'm out of time tonight, but I would love to have you back because I've got more questions for you, and I want more people to hear about this. So if you don't mind, I'll have Kathy get with you.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. But thank you.
I'd be happy to. Thank you guys very much.
And thank you, and God bless you. And absolutely, you got our thoughts and prayers with you for being bold and brave to do this. This is what we need to save our country.
Yep.
Absolutely. Have a great night.
Merry Christmas. Back at you guys.
Merry
God
Christmas.
Bless.
Merry
Bye
Christmas.
Now.
Christmas. You and your husband. On Trump and Tuesday of this week, Randy, Mike, and I spoke with Brandon Strock about his ordeal of being arrested by the FBI and facing federal charges for simply documenting from outside the Capitol some of the events of January 6, 2021. Strock is set to speak alongside FBI whistleblower Stephen Friend in Orlando on the upcoming January 6th anniversary. Brandon, thanks for being with us again tonight.
Hey, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we appreciate it. We're trying to remember, when was it the last time you were? I think it was in 2019. It might have been 2020 leading up to the election that year. But as I said, it's been far too long. But you're coming to town, and I guess you're hitting the road again. You didn't get enough last time?
No. I love being out and working and rolling up my sleeves and getting my hands dirty. And it was actually really difficult for me to cut back after 2021. You know, I was arrested by the FBI in late January of 2021, and basically had to go silent for an entire year while I worked through my case, and then ended up actually getting a house arrest as a sentence after that. So that kind of took me out of the game for a little while. But no, I love working and I love being out there, and so always excited to be busy.
Well, you have been one of the first to be persecuted, no matter what it is. When you started the walk away movement, you got persecuted for that. You were one of the first to get arrested and go to jail for the January 6th stuff. You want to set any more firsts here?
I'm sorry, would I like to do what?
You want to set some more firsts, something you're trying to accomplish here. Did you get President Trump reelected? What's your goal here?
My goal, as always, has been to get people to walk away from the Democratic Party. So, you know, my goal is to wake people up, get them thinking for themselves, doing their own homework, doing their own research, and leave the left. That's, as a former liberal, that's my mission.
So I want to talk to you, Brandon. This is Randy Ross. I'm also an openly gay conservative. But I wanted to say on the way in, I was talking to a friend that used to work in the beauty industry. And I know that's an industry that you came from or were in when you made this decision. And She actually told me that you were part of her motivation. She was working actually in the makeup industry as a makeup artist, and she was really condemned for being having conservative values. And she said you really became a person, like a beacon of light for her when you stepped away from a similar industry, even though it's not quite the same. Because I guess that was really frowned upon, liberal, you know, conservative approaches in that. So I don't know if I have a question as much as I have a comment to let you know there's a lot of people out there that are really paying attention to what you're saying. I have been for years. I've seen you. I've been at many rallies over the years, and I've seen you at rallies speak and get the crowd all excited and excited to see you gearing up again. I know a lot of people are and look forward to maybe seeing you when you're here in Orlando in January.
Well, it's awesome, you know, and I really appreciate you sharing that with me. It's always very meaningful to me to hear stories like that, because believe me, there are sometimes long stretches of time where it seems like the majority, if not the exclusivity of the feedback that I'm getting is negative. You know, I have to remind myself sometimes that there is a positive reason for doing what I do, because the attacks are so relentless and they're so brutal. You know, even hearing just one story like that occasionally reminds me of why I put myself, put myself through this. So thank you for sharing that.
Well, it's been 5 years, right, since you started the Walk Away movement?
Yeah, I started Walk Away in May of 2018.
And so you're coming up on a 6-year anniversary here. And do you find that the crowds are more willing to accept your, you know, I'm talking about the left. Are they now more willing to accept your position?
No. No, not.
Okay. All right.
No, not at all. You know, in fact, I think the whole reason why they did what they did to me with January 6th, in addition to trying to obviously throw like multiple wrenches into the cogs of what I was doing, is that they wanted to give the left an excuse to not take me as a serious person.
To marginalize you. To marginalize you, in other words.
Right. I mean, what they wanted to do was basically, do something where then the left could say, you know, why would I listen to this person? He's an insurrectionist. Why would I listen to this person? He's a terrorist. And to kind of give them that ammunition so that, you know, it becomes kind of a non-starter in a way to even try to have a conversation with me. So I would say that, you know, but I guess the positive thing I can say is it's never been my goal to try to convert every single person on the left. I do believe there is such a thing as some people are hopeless. I think they're absolutely hopeless people who are too brainwashed, too indoctrinated, and just too mean. Just inherently mean, bad people. But there are a lot of people, I think, who are moderate, who became liberals or joined the left for good reasons, like I did, and are either beginning to see or maybe open to seeing that something feels wrong and that there is a dialogue to be had about, you know, is the left today the same as the left used to be, or are you getting out of the Democratic Party what you once did? And I think people like that are able to see past the propaganda and at least listen or have a conversation. And, you know, my goal, if I could get 5% of the people who listen to me to change their mind or be willing to change their mind or budge a little bit, I consider that to be a total success. And if we were talking about like actually winning elections or, you know, shifting demographics, you don't really need much more than 5%. I mean, that's really all we need to start winning again. So, you know, I think that they put me in a position where, you know, the left has a lot of ammunition now to throw at me in terms of this January 6th, like terrorism, insurrectionist thing. But ultimately, I don't think it'll prevent me from reaching the people I want to reach.
Do you think that now having, you know, politics isn't for everyone. You've obviously stepped into a very murky water. Do you think now that you've been through, Chris, do you say 6-7 years now? I mean, all the ups and downs and all the, you know, because, you know, a lot of those folks on the left, they can just be incredibly nasty. I experienced that myself. Do you think you'll ever jump in the arena and actually run for office yourself? Or do you like being in the position of the outside trying to be the influencer?
Well, if I were ever to decide to run for office, it would not be something that I would talk about right now, because I'm on federal probation until the year 2025 with what I consider to be a very malicious government that seems to take great pleasure in tormenting people who are opposed to their ideology and using abusing their power to do a lot of harm to people who are successfully pushing back against their regime. So my probation ends a year from next month. And if I were to, you know, be talking about any kind of political future, that discussion would start taking place at that time, I think.
All right. When we get Trump reelected, perhaps he can go ahead and pardon you and get this off your record here, because it's a travesty. It's a travesty of justice. Y'all were set up. I think you know that now, Brandon, right?
Well, I mean, I can't even...
Okay, all right. Yeah, I don't want to get you in trouble.
No, I can answer that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, then.
I don't include myself in a group of people who were set up because I don't include myself in a group of people who did anything.
Right.
And I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to separate myself out and say that there are other people who deserve what's happening to them. That's not what I'm saying. But it's a well-documented and established fact that I went to the Capitol on January 6th because I was a scheduled speaker at a permitted event on a stage on Capitol grounds. And I started hearing that people were going inside the building. And so at that moment, I started shooting a video and I approached the Capitol, never went inside the building,
right,
and walked up to the steps on the east side where the doors were open. And I filmed for 8 minutes as people were walking inside. So to whatever degree I was set up, I don't know. I mean, I maintain I was documenting for 8 minutes something that I was seeing, and I uploaded that video to Twitter. And then my case became about the FBI and the DOJ alleging that I was not filming, but that I was encouraging and inciting. And given the charges that were against me, which were multiple felonies,
right,
felonies for someone who never entered the building and didn't engage in any violence or destruction or vandalism, I made the decision to plead guilty to a misdemeanor. And by pleading guilty to a misdemeanor, agreed to the government's assessment that I was encouraging and inciting people.
But by doing that, you also maintain your rights, like to vote and own a firearm, correct?
Yeah, because it's a misdemeanor, yes.
After you finish your probation.
Correct. I'm not a felon, so yes.
Right. By the way, you can follow Brandon on Twitter at Brandon Straka, spelled Straka, and Facebook. Where else can people follow you and find out more about what you're up to?
Yeah, so I'm on Facebook. I'm on X, formerly known as Twitter. Yep. I'm on everything. As you said, my name, at Brandon, Brandon, Strock, spelled Straka, with an extra A on the end.
Yep.
So they can find me on Twitter, Truth Social, YouTube. But we also have our own platform now for Walkaway. It's called Walkaway Social. And that can be found if you're an Android or an iPhone user, or iOS. Just go to your app store, load Walkaway Social, and jump on there. It's pretty cool. People are sharing their stories about walking away from the Democratic Party, just like they did when we had our Facebook group. And we have state groups for all 50 states, discussion groups. So I would highly encourage everyone to load the Walkaway Social app, jump on there, and see what's happening, because it's pretty cool.
By the way, the group that's sponsoring and bringing Brandon to town is Grassroots for America, located up here in Seminole County. You can go to grassrootsforamerica.org to get your tickets, grassrootsforamerica.org. And what do you have a specific topic for that night?
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about January 6th, and it's on January 6th. The event is on January
6th. That's right, yeah. Ironically enough, or was that done on purpose? Did y'all book that on that purpose on that night?
Oh, I'm sure they probably did it on purpose. It's not my event. I was asked to be a speaker at
right.
this event.
Right.
It's the Grassroots for America organization. But, yeah, so they're going to have a gentleman named Steve French, who is an FBI whistleblower.
Somebody. Yep.
Yeah, he left the FBI and has plenty of things to say about what's gone on behind the scenes, connecting the FBI to January 6th and other things. And then, of course, I'll be there to share my account of what happened before and after January 6th, because, you know, obviously it's not just about what I saw or experienced that day. It's about what happened for the 15 months after January 6th, what was done to me. for, again, someone who didn't commit any violence or even enter the building, but has been literally treated like a terrorist by my own government, and in fact even put on terrorism lists.
Oh yeah.
And the way that that's impacted my life. So these are things people really need to know. They need to hear. They need to share these stories. And I really would encourage everyone to come and be a part of it, because it's going to be pretty powerful.
No doubt. Once again, it is January 6th. Get your tickets at grassrootsforamerica.org. Stephen Friend, the FBI whistleblower, there as well. And this will be insightful, ladies and gentlemen. You'll get the true story from these individuals. So you need to take advantage of this at grassrootsforamerica.org. They do a great job, by the way, up there in Seminole County, digging up fraud in elections and bringing in great speakers with great ideas. And Brandon will be there as well. And Brandon, can you stay with me? I got to take a break, but I've got a couple more questions for you.
Sounds good.
All right. When we come back, Brandon Strock will still be with us. I hope you will be as well. And don't forget, in a little while, we have a brand new challenge for our Red Kettle Challenge to help out the Salvation Army. And I think you're going to like this one. At least it
is
could
this
be.
Mike, like a jersey of Mike's or something?
No,
that's going to make me vomit.
No. We want to get some real money.
But it may actually involve Mike.
Some dinner. Breakfast. At Waffle House.
You're jumping too far
You'll
out in front.
You'll have to wait and see. We'll be right back.
Hey, Central Florida, Dave Ramsey here. When you need advice on your taxes and want to work with someone who has the heart of a teacher, you need to see Larry Herring, CPA. He's one of our tax-endorsed local providers, and he's ready to talk with you about all your income tax needs. Larry Herring will help you manage your taxes just like any other expense. Take it from me, Larry is your guy. 407-647-7777 or at herringcpa.com.
Folks, do you suffer from nagging back or neck pain? Ever wake up feeling more exhausted than the night before? And what about that sleep partner who's turning your nights into a concert of snores or dealing with breathing issues, acid reflux, or sleep apnea? Here's the game changer. Discover a better night's sleep and a better day at Relax and Comfort. We're a unique mattress store. At Relax and Comfort, we're all about elevating your sleep experience, and we've got all the top brands to prove it, including Tempur-Pedic, Personal Comfort, and Stearns and Foster. Our smart beds aren't just beds. They're your personalized sleep sanctuary with hundreds of healthy positions. They're designed to fit you perfectly. Plus, they have an amazing feature, automatic snore detection and response. No more sleepless nights because of a noisy partner. The best part, we're conveniently located at Winter Park Village, just across from Regal Cinemas. Come see us today and experience a nice sleep like never before. Relax in Comfort, where better sleep leads to better days. That's relaxincomfort.com or visit us in person at the Winter Park Village, just across from Regal Cinemas, a family tradition since 1967.
It's that time of year again when you begin searching for that thoughtful Christmas gift. Well, Network Sound and Video makes memories last forever, restoring records, cassettes, VHS, and camcorder tapes to new digital formats like CD, DVD, or flash drive, so your family can enjoy them for a lifetime. So don't chance sending them out. Call right now at 407-834-8555 or visit online networksoundandvideo.com. networksoundandvideo.com, 407-834-8555.
Tuesday, here Tuesday.
Looking for your lost cat?
No, I'm looking for Tuesday.
What?
Tijuana Flats has two tacos, chips, and a drink for just $6.99 every Tuesday.
Tijuana Tuesdays?
Yes, have you seen it?
Tijuana Tuesdays, every Tuesday at Tijuana Flats.
Stuck in traffic? We've got the answer.
Looking at those roadways with lots of crashes. Greenway, crash at University, and a crash at Boggy Creek. Sand Lake, eastbound, crash at John Young. 436 northbound, crash reported at Chicory Lane before Howell Branch. 434 eastbound, crash near Mitchell Hammock. I'm Dave DiRica, your latest answer traffic.
Where patriots come for the top news stories, politics, and world events. AM 950, FM 94.9. The answer.
Sight. We're happy tonight, walking in a winter wonderland.
All right, we're back. We're live. We are the American Adversaries. We have Brandon Strock on with us, ladies and gentlemen. And go to the App Store and download the Walk Away Social app. Walk Away Social. Brandon, the probation that you're on, do you have to notify, like, an officer when you leave town to come down here to Florida, for instance?
Yeah, I have to get permission anytime I leave the state of Nebraska.
That's terrible.
Oh, man. And, yep. So, and now, you had no warning that they were coming after you, did you?
No, none. I mean, I never in a million years thought that I would be suspected of having committed a crime, even though I knew they were rounding people up for January 6th. And, you know, but I just assumed if you were getting rounded up, it was probably because you broke a window or fought with an officer or broke something or, you know, something like that. And so I really wasn't worried about it. I mean, I was a little uncomfortable with it, you know, everything that was going on. But no, 2.5 weeks after January 6th, I woke up at dawn to a team of FBI agents raiding my apartment, getting me out of bed, putting me in handcuffs, stripping my apartment of my computers, my phones, my iPads, hard drives, thumb drives, clothing, et cetera. And then they, cuffed me, marched me out of my apartment and took me to jail. And that's where I sat for several days as this all began.
Obviously, the industry you came from is strikingly different than politics. Knowing what you've been through, as a patriot for this country, that's what I would call you. Do you think you could ever go back to your old profession, or would you, or do you feel like this is now your life's calling and this will be something you do indefinitely?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about my, it's true that I did do hair for a while before I started Walk Away, but I don't really consider that my profession. Okay. I mean, it was something that I did for a few years, and it turns out I actually really didn't like it. I went to hair school, and later in life, I was in my 30s, and began doing that, didn't really love it, but if I look at my previous life, I would consider myself more of a performer. I mean, it was acting and singing that was always my dream. And, I definitely fantasize sometimes about how nice it would have been to just be able to perform and do something creative that I love and make a living at it. But the problem is that even if I were to decide to give up what I'm doing right now, which I actually think is very purposeful and mission-driven and important, the entertainment industry is not what it used to be anymore anyway.
Right.
I mean, you really can't avoid politics anymore. That's the thing. Everything is political now. Entertainment is political. You know, every school is political. Every industry, sports are political. Everything is political now. And so I feel like if I'm going to exist in a world that's highly politicized and polarized, I guess I'd rather be doing what I'm doing and actually be a part of the conversation and hopefully an agent that can affect some change.
Once again, Brandon will be in town along with Steve Friend, FBI whistleblower, for Grassroots for America presentation on January the 6th. And you go to grassrootsforamerica.org to get those tickets, grassrootsforamerica.org. Brandon, we just have a couple of minutes left here. How do you see this presidential thing shaking out? Because Trump's, you know, he's going up against getting a taste of what you got. Or you got
right.
A taste of what he's getting.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, no, it's I'm actually well. First of all, my opinion is pretty straightforward. I mean, I believe it is going to be Trump versus Biden. You know, every day people are saying like, oh, they're going to try to get Biden out and they're going to replace him with Michelle Obama or Gavin Newsom or whatever, and you know they're going to throw Trump in jail and it's going to be DeSantis. Like, I don't believe any of that. I think it's going to come down to Trump versus Biden.
A rematch.
Yep, and I do think that I think Trump has an extraordinarily solid chance. And, you know, people keep asking about the cheating. Well, you know, I always think that cheating is a factor. I think fraud is a factor. But I think that in 2020, it was the COVID shutdowns and all of those measures. That's what the cheating was. I think the cheating this time is the indictments and the lawfare.
Yep.
And it's not working. So I think we stand a really good chance. I mean, Trump is pulling ahead of Biden and has been for months. And, you know, you can't put all your faith in the polls. I get it. But I don't think Trump was ever pulling ahead of his competition in previous races. And now he is. That's got to mean something.
He's never polled this well. in his political career. By the way, we're also one of the few that are saying it's going to be a rematch. The primaries are already over. It's already decided. We have our two candidates, and the candidates already recognize this. Sooner or late, everybody else will as well. Well, Brandon, I look forward to seeing you when you come to town, but we'll be talking more, and we appreciate you being on the show with us today. And God bless you, man, for what you're going through and what you went through.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much. Brandon Strock, once again, you can follow him on Twitter. And then don't forget to go to your app store and download the Walk Away Social app, Walk Away Social, and go to grassrootsforamerica.org to get your tickets. Once again, he and Stephen Friend are coming to town on January the 6th, so quite appropriate. And that's grassrootsforamerica.org.